Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground, presented by Ram Trucks. Guts, glory, Ram.
Touchdown, Arizona!
The latest news and notes from the guys who cover the team.
Somebody open the front door! Stevens Howling's coming in!
Oh, baby!
Wells runs over a defender, knocks his helmet off, and gets into the end zone for a touchdown.
From Cardinals headquarters in Tempe.
Adrian Wilson just ate his liver with fava beans and a fine Chianti.
Touchdown, Larry Fitzgerald!
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
Get your rear right back in the locker room. You know, if single bar face masks still existed in the NFL, I'd be wearing one right now. You know why? Because I'm going to kick this thing off right here. Paulie Place Kicker, as we say, welcome into Cardinals Underground here on azcardinals.com. Brought to us, as always, by Ram Trucks, Guts, Glory, Ram, Paul Calvisi, Darren Urban, Jim Omohundro, and Ron Wolfley, who I'm going to first, D. Nothing personal here.
No, I won't take it personally.
One of Wolf's famous lines is that he has a PhD in what, Wolf? From your 10-year playing career, you have a PhD in...
losing.
So when you're in the locker room, and if only this was one of those visual podcasts where I could have taken a snapshot of the look on the face of Lyle Sendlein moments removed from the Monday night loss, and I'm not sure he blinked the entire post-game interview I did with him. Just the look on his face. And it takes me back to a guy like Chris Spielman. I covered the Lions for a few years. And most of the team would be out of the shower and dressed, and Spielman's still sitting in front of his locker in his pads. You know, some guys want to get away and get out. Some guys just can't escape it, and they sit there in front of their locker. What were you like? Because you're similar to Spielman in a lot of ways. What were you
absolutely
like?
No, I was pretty much the same way. I'd sit there in a dazed and confused fog. Many people would say I still am sitting in that dazed and confused fog. But that was me after a game. There was no doubt about it. I just wanted to reflect on every play. You hyperanalyze everything you did out on the field. And by the way, for the record, you know who else was like that? Was Jack Lambert. Wow. Jack Lambert was exactly like that. The only difference was is Lambert had a towel over his head and would sit there with his hands still taped and bloody knuckles smoking a cigarette.
I see.
He didn't have to do it after too many losses either.
Yeah, this one, though, you know, this one had to hurt the Arizona Cardinals, I think, their psyche collectively. And it's one of the reasons why leadership in the locker room, I think, this week is critical. You know, it's one thing. Wiz is always going to be the leader of this team. He's always going to set the tone. The coaches do the same thing. They pick up on the tone of the head coach, and they try to pass that along, be conduits of whatever tone the head coach is setting. They do that. But where the rubber meets the road, it's the players, and it's the players in the locker room. And your leadership has got to step up right now. And not only lead by example, and that means going out and playing well and giving all that they have, but then in so doing, by keeping everybody else accountable. And it starts with the guys in the locker room. You know, you get off to a great start, 4-0, and now you've lost four games in a row. And coming into last Monday night, you kind of had the feeling that the Cardinal players understood the importance of this game and drew a line in the sand and said, this is where this losing streak ends. We're going to go out there and be physical. We're going to show the world that our defense is just as good as the 49ers' defense. We're going to go out and do it in front of the nation. They kind of drew a line in the sand, and we were talking about this very thing last week. And you knew there's always that risk that you're so emotionally invested in that. And when things go poorly, things don't come out the way that you hoped that they would, that there's going to be an emotional letdown. That's why leadership in the locker room after a big game like that, where you've now lost four games in a row, that's what's going to pick this team up, literally.
We talked last week about it being a must win, or whether it was a must win and what happens this week. And I think I said something along the lines, and I think we all agreed that, you know, it'd be a 1 week at a time thing. If they win or they lose, you deal with it then. Well, now you're dealing with the loss, and now you're dealing with reality, and you're dealing with something you didn't want to have to deal with. And I completely agree with Wolf. I mean, this is, you know, there's a part of me that, you know, if you had to break it out, it would almost be better if their bye week instead of next week was right now.
Agreed.
Where you could have a complete delineation of this first half of the season and the incredible emotions to go from 4-0 to 4-4. You know, Kerry Rhodes told me the other day, he's like, you know, he goes, there are teams out there that are 4-4 that are happy to be 4-4. And there's just no way when you start 4-0 that you can have look at it in any way, shape, or form in that regard. And it'll be I'm very curious to see where this goes. You know, obviously the offense is headed in the wrong direction. You know, the defense has had a couple of hiccups the last couple of weeks in terms of you know, even the Vikings game, they didn't do a couple of things they would have liked to. And now you start – you worry about, you know, what happens now. Do you – you know, does the defense can it pick this team back up? Can the offense do enough? I mean, these are the things that are really important to see. And I don't know if necessarily Lambeau Field in Green Bay is the place you want to see if they can happen.
You know, a popular question after the game I asked to myself was, okay, what sort of options do you have? You know, I asked Ken Whisenhunt, you know, what can you do? I mean, but it's the middle of the season. You know, the trade deadline is going to come and go. And, you know, there's not a lot you can do in terms of personnel. I mean, you know, you don't have a lot of options. If you did, those moves already would have been made probably after loss number two in a row, Darren.
The bottom line is, other than the Chris Williams situation, the offensive lineman who I know they wanted – definitely, and actually thought they had a good chance of getting him before it turned out he ended up signing with the Rams. There haven't been a lot of options. There aren't a lot of options, and this is the NFL. There aren't – once you leave training camp, you are who you are.
And then you also have to realize that if you bring anybody in here, guess what? How many weeks is it going to be before he picks up the offense and he's able to go out and execute his assignment when you're not trying to pare down your offense as much as you're trying to ramp it up?
All right, so here's my assessment. You can agree or disagree, and then tell me if it's good or bad. Here's what I mean by that. It doesn't seem to be any one huge, overwhelming issue right now. You could contend the offensive line, but you know the last couple of games, the O-line didn't lose you the game in the first half. It seems to be a bunch of little things in different areas. So is that good or bad? Is it good that it's a bunch of little things, but a variety of things, as opposed to maybe one thing that you're trying to remedy?
Well...
because I'm talking about missed tackles, missed catches, you know, bad throws, missed
assignments. I think there are some little things, but I mean, you know, I don't want to be Mr. Doom and Gloom here because I don't. But you got to wonder a little bit about the little things. I mean, there are a lot of things. I don't know if they're necessarily a bunch of little lot of things.
So you agree with some of my assessment, maybe not all of it.
If I could jump in, Paulie, you know I love you and respect you, but I'm going to blow you out of the water on that.
Here it comes.
Look, the defense, I believe what we saw last Monday night was an anomaly.
I'll agree with that.
I believe it was an anomaly. I believe the defense played its worst game of the year, and I do want to give the San Francisco 49ers credit. I don't want to take anything away from the 49ers, but that is the first game with a real dynamic, the dynamic of this team and how they win games. It is the first time that it disappeared and evaporated on them. The foundation of this football team is the defense. And when the defense goes out and gives up 67 yards rushing in the first quarter, and 63, I believe, and 80 yards rushing in the first half, and that allowed Alex Smith to go out and get into a groove and play in a three-dimensional offense, and they gave up more points in one half than what they had been giving up over the course of an entire football game. To me, two drives, the 49ers, 10-play, 78, was it 78-yard or 77-yard drive?
77.
And an 8-play, 68-yard drive. They put together two drives where they didn't do anything fancy. They lined up and they played San Francisco 49er football, and the defense gave up 17 points. Again, you can talk about the offense and the problem with the offense. The only thing I know is this. When the defense, and this is the first game it happened, the first game where the defense did not play well, they did give up big plays. They didn't tackle well. But I think, again, I'll point to that game and say that's the first time I can really recall saying to myself, there's another missed tackle. There's another missed tackle. There's a missed assignment. The defense played its worst game of the season. And when that broke down, the entire dynamic for the football team, I think, broke down.
Now, I will say that in complete agreement with Wolf, I mean, it's happened a couple times over the last couple games in Minnesota and both in San Francisco especially. But, I mean, you know, you look at San Francisco, the three-yard pass to Crabtree that Peterson was there for. Crabtree made a pretty good play. It was fairly tight coverage, not great coverage, but fairly tight. And then of course the touchdown right before the end of the half, which was ridiculous. You get third down, you make him throw a 2-yard pass, and the guy is able to run the last seven in tight quarters among all the defenders and barely be touched. That wasn't happening. That didn't happen in New England.
No.
That didn't happen against Seattle. Those were field goals. And you take away two touchdowns and make those two field goals, things change. Ultimately, we're going to get back to the same thing, which is, as much as you kind of want to bang your head a little bit over what the defense didn't do against San Francisco, and it still would have been tough, you're not winning anything with 3 points. And 24 points isn't good in the situation this team is in terms of giving it up, but it shouldn't be a complete death knell. And right now it is. And it's tough when you're a defender knowing that, you know, if you give up more than 14 points, you could really be screwed. And I think that's kind of the direction you're going in. And it doesn't excuse anything. But, you know, again, this team, if the defense plays like it can, all this offense needs to do is get you 17 to 20 points a game, and you got a chance to win.
Yeah.
That's all you're asking the offense to do, and that's really not a lot. And they're not even sniffing that right now.
You know, it was sort of like pre-Ken Wisenhunt, there was a feeling on the sideline. I could just tell you a vibe that in a close game, it probably wasn't going to go the Cardinals' way. You know, they lost a lot of close games. You know, Ken Wisenhunt arrives, that changed. Now there's a confidence on the sideline in a close
absolutely.
Game. But similarly, with the way the offense is going right now, you get down two touchdowns, and there is a vibe, a sense that, oh boy, that's almost insurmountable with the offense. And so I think it does trickle down from the offensive side of the ball over to the defense a little bit.
I don't think there's any question. What's weird is for all the issues the offense has, there hasn't been a whole lot of change. I mean, obviously, John Skelton is playing quarterback now, but, I mean, you're playing with the same offensive line. And even though you're down to the end of the running back bench, it's not like Ryan Williams and Beanie Wells were lighting it up when they were in there in the first place. It's kind of amazing to me how it's just completely gone out the window, it seems like.
Do you think no huddle would help John Skelton? Is it me, or did it seem like they did a lot more no huddle the second half of last season with Skelton? He was a little more successful. Or is that just too darn risky? Because if you go three and out, it's 40 seconds off the clock.
Yeah, absolutely. You just can't go out there and say you're going to go no huddle. And you're going to do that on a regular basis. Typically, anytime you're going to do that, you put a ton of pressure on your offensive line. You put a lot of pressure on your offensive line. And not only that, there are people who will point to it, Paulie, and they will say, well, it keeps the defense more honest. It keeps them more vanilla. And a lot of times it fatigues those pass rushers. Well, yes and no, because many teams, of course, use a rotation on their pass rushers. They'll try to keep them fresh that way. And I know it's hard with substitution and trying to run somebody onto the field when you're going no huddle, but you run the risk of, you can use it as a change up from time to time, but especially when you've got a quarterback that's relatively inexperienced, if you're going to say that you're going to put your eggs in that basket, you really run the risk of putting your defense at odds. Now, you got to go back and look at the first four games of the season, because whether you want to admit it or not, the offensive line was the exact same offensive line where you won four games with that offensive line. And I have seen, I will argue in the Minnesota game, and I will argue in the San Francisco 49er game, that pass protection was not the problem. in the first half of those games. It only became the problem when they became one-dimensional in both of those games. What has to happen right now is the way this team is constructed, in my opinion, what has to happen is the defense has got to hold up its end of the bargain to the point that we were talking where you give up 14 to 17 points somewhere in there. Your special teams has got to make a play, and you've got to be able to get a short field every now and then. And that offense has got to remain three-dimensional, where you're running it, even if you're running it into the pile and you're gaining 2 yards. What you can't bear is losing four or 5 yards on first and 10, as we saw with the 49ers. That was brutal, but that's how this team is going to win games. And the blueprint is right there in the first four games of the season. And again, the offensive line, it trickles down. When we talk about all the little things that are hampering this team, it trickles down to one primary issue over and over and over again. And we saw it Monday night. It's the offensive line in regard to being able to open up holes in the running game and allow running backs to run through some holes and to protect once they become one-dimensional. And that's difficult for many offensive lines in the NFL, not just the Cardinals, but the Cardinals, I think we know, have struggled more than any other team by far and away with their protection.
What's interesting is if you talk about blueprint, then you're talking about a Packers team that has now won three in a row with an almost complete absence of a running game. And if you talk to a lot of the Cardinals defensive guys, they say sometimes they're not even conscious of running. They don't even try to run it. It's seemingly not even in the playbook. Of course, the one difference is they have maybe the number one quarterback in the NFL and Aaron Rodgers.
We've talked about that a million times. And with all due respect to John Skelton or even Kevin Cobb, you know, this is, you know, I'm going to go back to it every time. This is a quarterback-driven league. You put an elite quarterback, a high-end quarterback behind any team. You put Aaron Rodgers on the Cardinals. I mean, I keep seeing people saying, well, Peyton Manning, if he had come here, he'd be dead meat. And it would. I disagree. Now, would he be in good a shape as he is with Denver? I don't know. But you put a quarterback like that in this situation, this offense is much better. It just is. Because of the way a good elite quarterback handles himself. And I'm not saying that John Skelton can't win games for this team or Kevin Cobb, but, I mean, that's the reality. And going back to the Packers, you know, that's what happens. I mean, you have the elite quarterback. You can overcome the issues you might have, in their case, struggling mightily to run the ball at all. They still are able to win. And, you know, Aaron Rodgers just got named NFC Offensive Player of the Month. He's got, like, I forget what I think it's 18 touchdowns and 2 interceptions in the last 5 games. I mean, ridiculous ratios. And people are saying that their offense isn't even playing that well.
Well, you know, and if you look at their offense, you know, maybe they're just catering to their personnel because, you know, they're not all that equipped to run. That's obviously not their bread and butter. Mm-hmm. I mean, their best players are the guys in the passing game. So they're just.
And they've had a ton of injuries at receiver.
Yeah. So all I know is
they're. And not only that, too, Paulie, I will say that the Green Bay Packers over their last 3 games, they're averaging anywhere from, you know, 22 to 24 rushing attempts per game. So they're trying. They're trying to do it because they know this. They're at their best when they're able to do that. Not because Aaron Rodgers needs to be in a three-dimensional offense. Aaron Rodgers is good enough to say, okay, boys, here we go. We're going to spread the field, and Rocket Man's going to take this game over. But you need to be able to run the ball, especially the later the season goes, and the more you get into the postseason, you've got to have some other threat. You've got to be able to finish games, close games out, be able to run the ball. Maybe it's running the ball effectively in the red zone. So I think the Packers know it, and they're trying to get back to running the football. And I will say that if you look at the Arizona Cardinals defense and you watch them on film, teams that have run the ball have had the greatest impact on this team. They were number 2. Before this last game, Monday night, they were number 2 in defensive quarterback rating in the league. number two. The 49ers defense was number three. And you can talk about quarterback rating. Oh, it's so overrated. You go and look at defensive quarterback rating, look at the top 10, and look at the records of those teams that are in the top 10 of defensive quarterback rating. Go look at the defenses and whether or not most people consider them to have a good defense. It doesn't lie. The Cardinals were number two. They have done a great job getting pressure on a quarterback, bringing down completions, creating takeaways. They have done an excellent job impacting a passing team. It's when a team can line up and run the ball that we have seen teams and offenses be most effective.
And when you say rocking, man, you are not kidding. I would say there are three guys as we wrap up this edition of Cardinals Underground. In the 20 years I've spent on the sideline, I've been a wow, look at that guy's arm. Number one was a young Brett Favre, just winging it around the field going, whoa, look at that arm. Number two was Jay Cutler. Remember their first game when he was a rookie with the Broncos?
Yeah.
And he had that 70-yard touchdown pass, I think, of the first series in the season opener. Or maybe it was even a preseason game. It was early in the year. You're just like, wow, look at the howitzer on that guy. And the other guy is Aaron Rodgers. I mean, you just watch the ball. The release is ridiculous. And just the strength of the arm to make every single throw, seemingly, from end zone almost. It seems like that's how strong his arm is.
There are some players that I have talked to in the league that say you can hear the ball going through the air. You know what? You can hear it cutting the air when Aaron Rodgers throws the ball. The guy to me is without peer.
If you guys come down to me on the sideline, I don't answer. That's because I took off my headphones. I'm going to see if I can listen and see if I can hear the ball go right through the air at Lambeau Field. That's what I'm going to do on Sunday. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, try to prove that, Paulie. Be a myth buster.
I'll do it. Yeah, exactly. Maybe can I get some Ohms, do you have any high-intensity recording audio equipment that I can bring out there? Some there sonar? You know, maybe I'll grab the parabolic dish from the sideline TV guys. That's what I'll do. I'll train it right on the football.
Myth busted.
Okay. Cardinals Underground, as always, brought to you by Ram Trucks, Guts, Glory, Ram. No myth about that. For Ron Wolfley, Darren Urban, I'm Paul Calvisi, and Jim Omohundro. We'll see you next week on azcardinals.com.